Welcome to the I Speak FSBO podcast, where we pull back the curtain from the real estate industry and expose everything they don't want you to know. We share tips, tricks, myths, and truths to fight against outdated real estate traditions so you can sell your home for top dollar without having to pay a dime in commission or sacrifice your time. It's time for homeowners to take back the power and break up the monopoly. This is the I Speak FSBO podcast, and this is your host, Josh Knox.
Hey everyone, it's Josh with the I Speak FSBO podcast. On this episode, I wanted to talk to you about how to troubleshoot a transaction, how to troubleshoot what is going on with your particular home sale. And there are various stages that you could potentially need to troubleshoot. And I'm just going to go over a quick list here of those areas, and then we'll get into the specifics of each area. So oftentimes your listing will go live and then it won't get shown. Not a lot of people will call, and so you have to, that's the first area that you have to troubleshoot. And then if you are showing the property but you're not getting any offers, that's an area to troubleshoot. And then You typically will troubleshoot areas that have to do with inspections, appraisals, and then financing for the buyer. And then finally, you may have to troubleshoot certain things when it comes to the closing process. So with title or with the a title or escrow officer or real estate attorney, just depending on those last couple of things, just depend upon which state you live in. And so sometimes you have to troubleshoot there. So let's get into this first portion of troubleshooting, which is no showing. So it's not uncommon. You certainly don't want it. But if you list your property for sale and you are not getting any phone calls and therefore no showings, then you've got a problem. And that problem will typically have to do with how you're marketing the property, which includes the pictures that you've taken, the condition that it's in, and the price that you've put it at, and then the competition in the marketplace. So let me illustrate an example. If you are in a marketplace where you have multiple properties for sale and your pictures are just so-so and the condition of your house is okay, not awful, but not the best as compared to everybody else that's listed for sale. So let's say you're a 7 and everybody else is an 8 or a 9, and you've got your price right next to or right at or right above the competition, then you likely will get fewer showings, fewer phone calls, and it will put you in a position where you'll get frustrated because you haven't hit all three of the triggers: the price, the timing, and the competition. So when you're in that situation, you have to make an assessment as to what everybody else is doing. Go back, and if you haven't already, and you should, before you even get to this point in terms of pricing and listing your property. But if you haven't already, go back and look at what the competition is offering. Are they a similar square footage, but for a better price? Are they a similar square footage, but they have more amenities and your price the same as them? So let's say you're a 2,500 square foot home. The competitor's a 2,600 square foot home. Let's say that they're in a condition 8 or a 9 and you're in a condition 7 and both of you are asking $300,000. The likelihood of a buyer going to the other property first is higher because there's just a higher perceived value from how that person's marketed the house, meaning it looks better online, and so therefore the buyer will think it is priced better, more competitively, and then it becomes more appealing to that buyer as they're searching for homes. So if you are not getting any showings, you have to take a look at your price, your condition, and the competition again. and you need to see where you're at. Now, if you're not getting any showings and you've got competition that is more competitive than you, that offers more value, perceived value in particular, to potential buyers, and you're willing to wait a little while to see if those go under contract first, then by all means do that. But if you're not in a position to wait, if you need to get your home sold because you're, you know, making a move for a job someplace else, or for whatever reason that you are dealing with this home sale, then you need to make a quick adjustment in order to get your home sold. You don't, time is not your friend. And so you need to make an adjustment on typically the price and then how you're marketing the property. Now, if you, I'll go back one point. If you do have time on your hands, then wait to see if those other properties are going under contract. If they aren't, then you're going to run into a problem. You'll run into a stagnant listing. That's what will happen to you. You become the day-old bread on the shelf, and people will continue to pass you by. And if you don't make an adjustment soon enough, which is typically within 1 to 2 weeks, sometimes 2 to 3 weeks, then you're going to run a real risk of staying on the market for way too long. And then you'll end up chasing the price down. So it's better to make the adjustment up front on your listing, especially with price, than it is to wait and chase it down. But if there is a lot of movement and activity happening in your market, if those homes that are your competition go on the market similar time frame to you, are getting under contract or going under contract rather quickly, then you can probably wait a little while to see if yours picks up. But if you're not getting any showings and you're not getting any phone calls, then you've got a real problem and you need to make an adjustment pretty quickly. So that's the first area that you would troubleshoot your transaction. Now, if you are getting showings, if you're getting, I don't know, a handful to maybe a dozen showings, but no offers, then you need to go back and look at the feedback that you've been gathering on your listing. What is everybody saying to you? Are they saying that the price is okay, but the condition isn't great? Or are they saying the price is okay, but they wished, you know, these 2, 3, or 4 things could be changed, right? Or are they saying they like the condition of the home, but they think the price is a little bit high compared to what everybody else is doing? You have to take a look at that, because if you're showing the property and you're getting feedback from people, then the answer is in there why you're not getting offers. It typically will have to do with your price and the condition of your property. So go back and look at that feedback that you've been collecting and potentially call back those people that gave you the best feedback. See if they've made an offer someplace else. See if you could come to some type of agreement, such as, hey, you did like these pieces, but you thought maybe you wanted to make a change there. If we were willing to make that change, would you be willing to put an offer down on the property? That is a good way to go through if you're not getting any offers and troubleshoot that particular part of your transaction. Now, the next way that you're going to troubleshoot will typically come after you've had a buyer submit an offer and that you've accepted. And this has to do with the buyer's due diligence or inspection period, where they're going to hire an inspector to come through the house and take a look. And what we typically see in the real estate industry is most inspections go fine. Every inspector is going to find something in every home out there. Even brand new homes aren't perfect. And so you can expect any buyer who hires an inspector that comes to take a look at your house is going to find something. The question will be, what is it that they find? Is it a big dollar item or is it a little dollar item? And then if it's a big dollar item, how are you going to handle it? And if it's a little dollar item, how are you going to handle it, right? So typically little dollar items for folks, you know, electrical items, maybe a switch doesn't work anymore or an outlet doesn't work or a light fixture doesn't work, or maybe the dishwasher, if you have one, isn't draining quite as good as it should, or maybe a toilet runs, or little items like that, right? Typically people are more than willing to concede a little bit of money. They might say, well, you know, we think this is worth $500 and that's what we're willing to concede. And so the buyer will say, okay, it's not that big of a deal, but if you're willing to give me $500, I'll take it. So you've troubleshot that particular scenario. If it's a bigger item like a furnace or a water heater or even a roof or something like that, or a foundational issue with the property, then you really have some tough negotiating, tough troubleshooting to potentially deal with, because that impacts your bottom line as a seller, right? Foundational issues can run in the thousands of dollars. Sewer lines from the house out to the city line can run into the thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars, depending upon where you're at. So you want to get through that situation and understand the implications of what any of those costs would be. And what I have found is that if you are running into higher cost items, heating and air conditioning systems, roofs, sewer lines, any kind of stuff like that, it is often better to concede the amount of money that the bid came in at. And if the buyer goes out and gets a bid, then you want to go ahead and get your own bid as well. The difference being, don't hire the person to do it, because then you would have to be dealing with potential warranty work after the fact as the person who paid that bill. And it's better to transfer it to the new homeowner. So as an example, let's say the heating and cooling system went out and it's a $4,500 bill to get that fixed. If the buyer gets a bid for the same cost and you get a bid for the similar cost, and then you go back to him and say, look, I'm willing to concede on this, I'll give you the full amount to get this fixed, but you need to close first and you'll get that money through closing, because you don't necessarily have it in your pocket, right? Plus, you don't want to hire that contractor. Let that person hire the contractor, manage the work. You've sold the property and everybody's agreed to what's happening and you move along. You can get into a sticky situation if you try and manage that after you move. It's just a headache for you to deal with. So it's better to concede on price. So that's how you're going to troubleshoot an inspection period. The next one is an appraisal. If you run into an appraisal issue, and typically appraisal issues are just that they've come in lower, but sometimes an appraisal issue lower than the sales price that's been agreed upon by both parties. But sometimes you can run into an appraisal issue if the buyer is going after FHA financing and you've agreed to that in the contract that you're willing to let them get FHA financing. Then in some cases, the appraiser is going to point out particular areas in FHA guidelines that will need to be fixed by you. In fact, the buyer won't be able to pay for those. So you have to think through troubleshooting that with, okay, if it's, you know, usually it's a safety item, a smoke alarm or a carbon dioxide monitor, or it has to do with some of the exterior of the property. I've seen come up in appraisals like that, where paint's peeling and it needs to be, you know, sanded down and fixed. You have to take care of that as the homeowner. I mean, you could hire a handyman to do it, but it's on you to do that. It's not something that you can just give money to the buyer for them to handle after. It is a condition of their financing. And so you have to take care of that while you're going through it before you can even close. Now, if it is an issue with an appraisal coming in under value, which I have seen before, in fact, I know of an instance in the past where we had two offers on the property. The sales price was bid up past the asking price. The seller went with the higher priced offer in that situation, which they don't always do. And I'll talk about that in a different podcast. But they went with the higher price offer, and then the appraisal came in and it knocked. In this case, the price of the property agreed to in the final contract was $5,000 over the list price. And so the appraisal came back at the actual list price. And so the seller just had to concede in that instance. Now, they could have potentially said to the buyer, look, I'm not going to concede. You're going to have to make up the difference in the cash that you have available. But in this instance, the seller conceded because overall, it wasn't that big of a hit for the seller. They were okay with being able to do that. Some people aren't. Some people aren't in the position to do that. And so you need to know how to troubleshoot that situation, which is why it's important to understand how much the buyer is bringing to the table in terms of a down payment. And that's a whole other podcast as well. But you would need to troubleshoot that if you're going through that scenario and how you're going to handle it. But oftentimes you're going to concede on price if the appraisal comes in lower. And then again, if in terms of an FHA financed transaction, which you would know about when you sign the contract, the buyer would have to disclose to you, likely in an addendum, that they are seeking FHA financing. And so you would have to know the implications of that. But if you have an FHA deal, then you likely might find something in the appraisal inspection. In my experience, it was never something that was so overwhelming that it couldn't be overcome. Just be aware of how you're going to troubleshoot that situation. So finally, well, not finally, the next one is in financing. And this is harder to overcome. Sometimes buyers just don't make good decisions through the process. Sometimes a buyer is unfamiliar with the fact that they are so close to the line on their credit and how much credit they're using and how it can affect their overall financing that they make uninformed decisions. So an example of that would be is if a buyer is looking to buy your house and they're also looking to put new furniture in the new home and they're excited about that. And so as the day of closing approaches, they decide to try and coordinate a furniture purchase in with moving into the house. And when they do that, they go finance it through the furniture company or through a credit card. And then when the lender who pulls credit near the end or virtually the end of the final underwriting guidelines, we'll find out that their credit has been extended again and it puts them outside of the allowable limits in underwriting guidelines and therefore messes up their financing. So the only way that I've seen people overcome that is to see if they can get a different loan or to see if they have cash to change the mathematical dynamic of how they're being financed, which means they can either bring more money down or they pay off something on their credit to get it back in line. It ends up delaying the transaction, but ultimately it still can get done. But I have seen it kill deals entirely where a buyer has just gone out and got the furniture or they got a new car or they used their credit card in some way to go on a vacation before they were going to move. And so it affects their credit and therefore affects their underwriting guidelines to get their loan. So financing is a bit tougher to get around if a buyer makes that kind of decision, because if they're making that kind of decision, typically they aren't in a position to change what has happened with cash. And then of course you can't really go borrow it from a family member because sometimes funds have to be seasoned according to underwriting guidelines. And so you just have to understand how that's going to go. If the deal falls apart because of financing, then you start back at square one. And what you really do is you go back to any other buyer that's already looked at the house that expressed any kind of interest and you let them know, hey, the house is back on the market. The buyer's financing fell through. And that's important for any other buyer to know. They don't want to be told it fell through because there was a problem with the inspection. But it's okay for them to understand that a buyer's financing fell through at the very end. And now your house has become available, because buyers that are just kicking tires sometimes who give you good feedback may have halted their search and forgot about your house and then see that it's gone under contract. And then if you come out of contract, you can contact them again. I've seen that situation work a number of times where I've been able to call a buyer back, or somebody on my team has been able to call a buyer back. Back in the past when I was licensed, and find a buyer from those previous buyers. So that's how you would troubleshoot that scenario. And then finally, when it comes to title, sometimes you can run into small troubleshooting issues. Typically, it's not going to deal with the actual title itself, whether or not there's an extra lien on it that nobody knew about, or a different cloud on it that nobody knew about, because in the beginning of the transaction, as you're getting everything in order and assembling the team that you're going to work with to close the deal, title would have given you a preliminary title report and let you know if there were any clouds on it. So when it comes to the end of a transaction, what can potentially be a small troubleshooting item to deal with is how contracts are written. So sometimes not every signature is there in the right place, or not every initial is there in the right place. And so that can cause a problem. Sometimes a legal name on a document isn't accurate. So we all have nicknames sometimes. I guess not all of us, but people have nicknames or go by a different name in their regular life, but their legal name and how they get a loan or how they're transferring title to a property can sometimes be different than what's on a contract. And so oftentimes you have to troubleshoot those right in the end. And it's best to handle that right up front. So whenever you're writing a contract, you know, make sure everything on your end is your legal name, how it appears on your driver's license, how it would show on title, so on and so forth. So troubleshooting that ends up happening in the very beginning, but it can be dealt with in the end through, you know, an additional document and title, or if you've hired a real estate attorney, can help you through that scenario, and typically will. They'll know exactly what to say to you and which documents they need to have changed to make the correction. So those are by and large the items that you would have to troubleshoot when it comes to a real estate transaction. It's not an exhaustive list or a comprehensive list, but those are by and large the bigger things that you could potentially run into. Bigger is not the right word. Those are by and large the items that you could potentially run into to have to troubleshoot through a transaction. So I hope this has been helpful to you. And as always, I hope to see you on the next podcast.